We love our earth. With all our hearts and our minds and our souls, we can't help it. It is a primal love. It's like the love of a young child for its parents. It is without words, without consideration, without thought. The earth makes our lives possible. It is our home. It is our mother, our father, our parents. It is the ground of our being. Our earth, our beautiful blue-green ball swirling in the dark of space, the trees outside the sanctuary, the air that fills our lungs moment by moment, keeping us alive and connected to all that lives. The gravity that holds us firmly while allowing us to move and be. Our earth, life-giving, life-holding, miraculous. We celebrate Earth Day today. To celebrate the earth and our profound love, our absolute dependence, and our deepest gratitude is essential. We owe it our first and our strongest alliance. Every single day should be Earth Day, filled with litanies of gratitude and joy and love for what makes our lives absolutely possible. That is not why we celebrate Earth Day, however. It is not the accumulation of days of gratitude into one remarkable, joy-filled celebration, like Christian Easter multiplied, celebrating that none of this was probable. No, Earth Day has not been that day. Instead, our Earth Day came after centuries of human separation from the rest of creation. Did that start at the beginning of Homo sapien existence? The cognitive revolution? Writing? Civilization? Greek philosophy? Monotheism? The Enlightenment? It doesn't matter. It happened. The earth has been considered base, profane, and not holy in Western dominant religious traditions. Our separation has moved at an extraordinary clip since the Enlightenment and the Industrial Revolution and consumerism. We took the spirit from the world and made the earth into an object that could be studied and understood and used. And we thought, with hubris of the very young, controlled. We changed things. We plowed over ecosystems, poured carbon into the air, sprayed the lands with poison, and filled the rivers with garbage, and were shocked when nature snapped back. Animals and birds we counted on or loved began to die. Rivers started on fire. The air became unbreathable. That first Earth Day in 1970 was designed to be a wake-up call, not a celebration, just a wake-up call to the fact that life on Earth was in big trouble. Concerns among scientists had been rising through the 1960s since Rachel Carson published Silent Spring and publicized the serious damage of pesticides to the natural world. Earth Day was the start of the environmental decade in the United States, and we seriously took to cleaning up polluted air and water. We changed things. Each year we return to this day to remember our responsibilities to care for the earth. Each year we return to look with a clear gaze at the state of things. And this year we have many reasons to have broken hearts. The federal government is run by mostly wealthy white men who see the earth as an object to be used for their self-aggrandizement. They pulled out of the Paris Agreement, climate agreement, and are dismantling years of environmental regulations and laws and not enforcing the ones that we do have. And this can feel so overwhelming and so daunting. So can the discovery of the straws we've been sipping soda through for years and the bags that we've carried our groceries home are loose in the sea, destroying habitats and beautiful sea creatures. Or learning that the fleece jackets we wear mean every living thing is now breathing in microfibers of plastic because fleece releases these into the environment every time we wash them. For years, the environmentally aware have lived in fear of carbon dioxide reaching 350 parts per million. At this point, we were told the atmosphere would reach the tipping point. And when that happened, climate change and the heating of the earth was inevitable. And we reached over 400 parts per million a couple of years ago. And this week, it was 410 parts per million. And all of this feels really bad. How do we live in this culture as if other life on Earth mattered? How do we know what to do and how to do it? None of this is easy. That first Earth Day in 1970 affected my life profoundly. In 1970, my parents were getting their PhDs in biology at Oregon State University in Corvallis. I was 5 years old and in kindergarten. My parents were deeply affected by that day and the call to care for the earth. They knew from their work in biology how miraculous and wondrous ecosystems are, and they were determined to do what they could do to do their part to save the intricate ecosystems of our planet. What they decided to do was to model living lightly, but very well, on the land. Their dream molded my entire childhood, which included building small, energy-efficient homes and outbuildings, gardening, and raising animals. And I carried that dream with me into adulthood, when in my 20s, my husband and I built a passive solar home and tried valiantly to grow all our own food. I grew up believing in ecological collapse. The recycling program my parents and their friends started in our town, our composting toilets and chickens, and living off the grid were all part of stopping that. We would be an example that others could follow, I was taught. There was articles in the local paper about us. We were even in Mother Earth news for the earth bricks we created from the soil on our property over 2 summers so we could build our barn with them. As I grew, though, I watched the land I had wandered with my brothers divided into 5-acre plots and covered with dozens of huge homes with 3-car garages. I watched the other land that I had come to love, wetlands and small farms and the curved hills of the Palouse, paved for grocery stores, storage businesses, and hair salons. My parents told me the world would die unless people's ways changed, and I saw what they meant. I also saw that people were not changing their ways. They were not going to live in 900 square feet houses like the one I lived in. They were not going to have composting toilets that had to be shoveled out once a year. They were not going to raise food and even recycle unless recycling bins were brought to their door. There seemed no hope in my parents' gesture. And after years, my family also could no longer do it. None of us live simply like that now. Sure, we recycle and compost and grow a smidgen of food and do other odds and ends to lessen our personal footprint. But the package deal was just too hard. The culture was going in a different direction, the direction of more stuff, bigger stuff, more plastic, less sustainability. The earth seems to be in the middle of the sixth great extinction. Five times on this earth, something has gone terribly wrong, and over 75% of all life was decimated. That's the definition of a mass extinction. We, of course, all know the asteroid that hit the Earth and wiped out the dinosaurs and so much other life at that time, 95% actually. And we aren't so sure about the other mass extinctions. They seem more complex. But we do know that the Earth is a geologically active place, living in an active universe, and stuff happens. After every extinction, though, life came back with a flourish, creating through stress and strife new ways to be life. Almost every species on this earth now was made possible by the extinctions of the past, including our own. I grew up believing people had the power to actually hurt the earth in irreversible ways. I still hear people say that we have to do something to save the earth. And this isn't even a little bit true. The earth is and will be fine. It's endured a lot already. It's changed a lot already. And life is going to be okay too. Life is a process. It's not something solid and stagnant and firm. It just keeps transforming. When devastation happens, it finds a new way to exist. This is the big cycle of life. Right now, in urban places, animals are quickly evolving to thrive in cities. White mice in Central Park have turned on a gene that makes it so they are more capable of eating all that fatty stuff that gets dropped in the park by people. And lizards in the Southwest in Mexico have evolved so that their feet will stick to the slick sides of modern buildings, and the shape of their legs have changed so that they can scurry more quickly over them. The sixth great extinction started when we, Homo sapiens, arrived on the scene 100 to 200,000 years ago, and this is not a coincidence. Homo sapiens changed things. The first thing we did was come out of Africa and we took over the planet. And at that time, every continent on Earth had amazing, huge creatures living on it, megafauna, we call them. In Australia, there was a tortoise the size of a VW bug and a kangaroo that was 10 feet tall. And every time that Homo sapiens showed up, those big creatures went extinct. Island after island, continent after continent. Homo sapiens changed things because we want the world to serve us. And we were doing this long before religious and philosophical separation from nature. We were doing this long before the Industrial Revolution. This is what we do. We change things. We have physically changed 1/3 to 1/2 of the Earth's land surface and diverted or dammed nearly every river on the planet. We took corn and cows and chickens and transformed them and spread them across the planet, forcing out other forms of life. And we are quickly changing the climate. Our transformation of the Earth's surface and our exponentially increasing population has killed 50% of all individual wild animals since 1970. The Earth doesn't need to be saved, and life doesn't either. But all of this is so sad. It is so incredibly sad. Because these are the forms of life we have come to love. They're the ones that we have grown up with all of our existence. And these statistics all call into question our ability to sustain ourselves.
We change things. That isn't only bad news. That is good news, too. We noticed that songbirds were dying from pesticides, that the air was unbreathable, that rivers no longer supported life. So we learned how to reverse the damage. We brought the songbirds back. We cleaned up the rivers and the air. We changed things. Sometimes that is bad news. After years of supporting environmental regulations, our country elected Donald Trump, who put Scott Pruitt in charge of the EPA. They are slashing environmental regulations and laws and not enforcing the ones we do have. But we change things, and that is good news. During this time, we get to notice all those rules that made our country more healthy and more welcoming to the life forms that we know. They had become invisible to many, and that gives us a chance to recommit to the policies that make our earth livable for us and others. We love the earth. It's primal. Because the earth, with its climate and ecosystems of the last 250,000 years, have made our lives possible. And we change things, and we don't always do that for the better. When we see the dizzying mess we've made sharing the earth and of keeping it safe for people, it can feel super hard and overwhelming and depressing. We don't know what to do, or what actions matter, or how one can fix the onslaught of 7 billion people, many who crave the lifestyle that our culture models, big houses full of stuff and lots of cars and airplanes and surpluses of food. I don't know what to do, and I was raised to ask the question, and I was raised to live the answer. Personally, I tend to be someone who gets dismissive of campaigns to get everyone to carry their own grocery bags or go on personal journeys to zero waste. My family did something like that, and our neighbor developed 250 acres and put up dozens of massive houses. I am much more a ban the bags, pass the laws to simplify the packaging and build mass transit kind of person. My family helped start a recycling center. But most people in my town didn't recycle until the bins showed up on their doorstep. But I also know the pressure of example matters. If my parents and their friends and others had not started recycling centers in the 1970s, would wide-scale recycling have been possible? Would people have learned to do it, to take plastics and newspapers and change them into something else? The current campaigns to live zero-waste lives ignites imagination so that zero-waste society becomes possible. It has sparked my imagination. With zero-waste publicity, I am more likely to notice what I throw away and curious, both about how my habits and the patterns of commerce would have to change so I would throw nothing away. Small examples allow for experiments. In McMinnville, just down the road from here, they have a zero-waste program in the community, and they passed an ordinance banning all bags in all stores of all kinds. And it is sponsoring a grocery store aisle in one of the stores with all recyclable and reusable packaging. And don't we need those steps to change things, both imagination and experiments? What would we have to do to change, to keep us out of our cars, to decrease our living spaces by half, to never use poison again? What would we have to do so we could change that for everyone, not just the enlightened few? Homo sapiens change things. We change things when changing them will make our lives better. And we know that maintaining the conditions that make our lives possible, the conditions of climate, of habitats, of ecosystem, makes our lives better. We blundered, but we know that now. So this is what I wonder. I wonder what would happen if we celebrated Earth Day every day. If we woke up singing praise for the dawn, if we bowed our heads over each meal, over each morsel of food, saying thank you for the Earth's bounty, for the possibility of our lives, if we praised the night as it rose, and if we gathered weekly to celebrate the miracles of our lives, I wonder what would happen if we paused before we drove in our cars, threw plastic wrappers in the garbage, and washed our fleece jackets, and said, I know the harm of this, and I am sorry. Please help me know how to change it. I imagine we might remember our love of the earth, which is so easy to forget, and live it so firmly that we could not help but change, not just our habits, but insist on ways to live sustainably for all people on our planet. There is always hope, because Homo sapiens change things. That's what we do. Amen. I guess we have time for questions. I didn't think that was even probable, but...
I think one of the questions is, can we change one of the most basic things about us, which is the urge to reproduce? The real problem is there are far too many human beings on the planet, and there used to be a thing called zero population growth, but that's not enough. So population shrink would be a good idea.
And possibly the microbes will take care of that. You know, the Earth likes balance, and the microbes are stronger than we are. So,
actually,
which is terrifying. I mean, it's all such suffering. There's just suffering. I mean, you know, you lose several billion people. That's pretty horrible. You know.
Actually, if you read journals like Foreign Affairs and Current History, you'll see that in fact the population growth is dropping severely. We're on our way to zero population growth and eventually negative population. It's happening.
Tracy, thank you. Another factoid you can add after the burning rivers of the 1960s, action was taken and the Great Lakes are much better, but apparently a lot of the fish population is, well, they're much happier, but they may not survive very well because they're being affected by antidepressants, which are in the water.
Really?
And the effect is that they are less risk averse and maybe more likely to be caught. Anyway, another factoid about our effect on Earth.
Well, and I think one of the things that I find fascinating about us is that we just don't know or understand the ways that our actions affect the world. Like, who would think that people taking antidepressants since, I guess, the 80s is when we started doing that, would affect the fish. Like, how? We're just not smart enough, and I think we should not be able to pay with anything dangerous. That's what I think.
I just saw a Google News. I look at Google News all the time, and I just read, I think this morning, that Sweden is now burning all of their trash and for energy. In fact, and there's a 1% of the toxins go in the air. So 99% of it is they figured out how to get rid of 99% of the toxins. But they're actually importing garbage for their energy use.
Wow.
Now, not just this morning. Now we have the technology to make stuff happen like that. In fact, Elon Musk once said that if you take the same land mass as a nuclear power plant and put solar panels on it, you'll generate more electricity with solar panels than with a nuclear power plant. I mean, so we have the technology to fix things, but currently, under our current political problem, we don't have the will, and certain people are making a whole lot of money by not by not allowing any brilliant schemes to fix the environment to happen, like Scott Pruitt and the like, where the war on coal is over. War on coal. War on coal. When he said that, I couldn't believe it.
But so that's kind of one of the things. I mean, we do have the, we can have the political power if we choose.
And we have.
I mean,
a
that is absolutely true.
And we have a democracy, and we can vote.
And, you know, it's hard, though, I mean, raising the political power and the political will, but it's not impossible. It's a thing that can happen.
There's hope.
So somewhere in between that Sweden importing garbage and, which I read about, too, we talked about that in my class, and the feeling that you can't do anything as an individual, right? But we now have problems in our own community with recycling because nobody wants our recycling because we suck at it. Because individuals put a bunch of stuff in our recycling bins that isn't recyclable, and so our recycling is such a mess that other countries don't even want to try and recycle it because it's just trash. So I think there are individual things we can do, like getting better at recycling and only putting the things in the bin that are supposed to be in the bin, that maybe can make something of an impact.
Right. That's true.
I just started reading a book called The World Without Us. And I've only gotten through the first chapter. But basically, you know, what the message I'm getting is that if humans went away, no one else would miss us. I mean, it's true. I think that that's, we have this inflated sense of importance that believes we change things and that change doesn't happen without us. And it does. And you know what? We're not behaving like a very good species, a very healthy species.
And we never have. And so maybe we were nature's mistake, which is a horrible thing to think, because I mean, mostly where I go with this is that I really do believe, my deepest hope is that the earth will be fine and life will be fine. I really, truly believe that with all my heart. And it has made my life so much better. And I also believe that the destruction we're doing to the environment, the destruction that we do to the air and to our own bodies and to the bodies of other creatures, and is so much suffering. It's so much suffering. And that is what breaks my heart. And I would love to not have us go through that part. I would love us to fix it so that we don't have to have that suffering. So.
Speaking of politics, one of our most sunniest areas of the country, Florida, has now almost banned solar heating and solar power now. They're really restricting the use of and not encouraging the use of solar power because it's not helping the energy companies because they're not making as much money because they're using the sun instead of coal or whatever else. And you just have to shake your head. It doesn't make sense.
Power's pretty big. There's a lot of really intense power that's against making things better.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that on May 6th, Arianna Scipione is going to be here after the service at 12:30, and she's going to be talking about recycling and about what we do now that China is no longer taking our recycling, how we get a little bit smarter about what we're doing and go towards zero waste. So this is a good way to continue this conversation with a woman who's been working really hard in this area. May 6th at 12:30.
Thank you. That's wonderful.
This will be our last question. On the very individual, mundane level, Sierra Club magazine a few months back, I think it was before the holidays, was listing eco-friendly products. So one of them is a bag for $35 that you can launder your fleece clothing in that will keep the fleece in and not into the water. It'll wash the clothes without letting the fleece fibers into the water system.
That's pretty fabulous.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tracy.
And there's also, so the Earth Day this year is sponsoring, like, Think About Our Plastics. And if you go to the Earth Day webpage, the main one, you can download a whole way to audit your own plastic use and make sense of it. So if you're inclined in that direction, it's definitely a way to start thinking about those questions.
Thank you.